Welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd. Join me today is Wario Will.
Welcome to August, everyone. We're finally into the 8th month of this year, and this month, the hot topic, it is No More Heroes 3, which we're counting down the days coming out, and I cannot wait.
Woo! Okay, hold on. Where's the we here, all right? Like, I've never played No More Heroes. All right, the closest thing I got was writing a certain April Fool's Day joke about Travis getting into Smash Brothers. And pretty sure Tyler hasn't played No More Heroes. He has not. So there's no we. There is the. The as in ye, as in you. So clarification, dearest.
All right.
And also here is Telly Seller.
I am so excited that it is August. August is a quiet month outside of the aforementioned No More Heroes 3, but we are getting to September, where the Switch calendar just becomes packed with great games, so I'm very excited.
Yeah. I, for one, am like, it's August? Like, how? Like, weren't we just in January? Right. Like, I remember 2020 moving by at a certain pace, I do, but this year feels like it's flying, all right? Because weren't we just at E3? Weren't we just talking about
that yesterday?
Yeah, Kazuya and everything. Like, what's going on here? All right. So, I mean, right after the podcast, I'm going to go watch the Suicide Squad on HBO Max. And I'm like, wait, wasn't I like waiting for that for months? And now it's here. So, like, what's going on?
So, that looks so good. I might have to watch it right after all. I want to pay for it in theaters, though, because it looks so good.
Oh, I'm going to do both. It's just, it's out now. And I'm like, I deserve it. I've been working hard all week. All right, I freaking deserve it. So I'm going to watch Suicide Squad. So hashtag release the air cut. Anyway, we got a lot of interesting things to talk about today, but we're going to all start off with what have you been playing? I'm going to go first again because due to my busy work schedule and the fact that I was at a Comic-Con last week, I have not been able to play much. So I will talk about my con a little bit because it was my first con that I was at in 18 months due to this thing called the pandemic. And you might have heard of it. So I was really eager to go. It was a really great experience. I sold a bunch of books and the cosplays were all on point. Surprisingly, though, there were only a somewhat small selection of Nintendo cosplays. The biggest one that I saw was that we had an Ash, not me, and a giant inflatable Pikachu. Yeah, and it was a kid that was in that outfit, so I actually felt bad for him because it was so hot in the basement we were in. That kid had to be roasting. And, of course, everyone was wanting a picture of him, so we... They put him on a stage, and like for like 5 minutes, people were getting pictures, and then the kid like left to go to get out of the costume. And I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all.
Yeah, it definitely takes a toll, yeah. Especially, and we're still technically in summer, so yeah, that thing stinks. I mean, yeah. If it's like a fall season or winter, yeah, much better. But yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't recall seeing a lot of Nintendo cosplayers. There was a lot of cosplayers there, don't get me wrong, but they mainly stuck with superheroes for the most part. I saw I saw a She-Ra, so that was pretty cool. Princess of Power version. And you know, I expected more. So my next con is going to be one of the bigger ones in the region via Planet Comic-Con in Kansas City in a few weeks. 2 weeks today, give or take. And so I will definitely be keeping my eyes out for more Nintendo cosplays around then. Because usually the bigger cons always bring in the bigger crowds and more diverse cosplays. In terms of gaming, obviously I've been playing Fae. And I... To reiterate the why do I like this game... Alright, first of all, we had a Fae channel, which we'll talk about later. But... still nothing on Choose Your Legends, which sucks. But then they had a pirate banner, and they had enough new characters, and I'm like, fine. I have like 560 orbs. Let's try and summon a character. And of course, you know, 20 orbs, 40 orbs, 60 orbs, 80 orbs, 100 orbs, 120 orbs, 140 orbs. Later, I finally get one character. One. I got Nasala. Was fine, because he is a pirate at least. I will at least convey that he is a pirate. All right, but it's like I spent 140 orbs to get one character, and then I got two random 5 stars that just like Okay, fine, sure. And then
Mm-hmm.
there was the voting gauntlet, or Kaspar won.
Yep,
How?
yep,
How
yep.
did Kaspar
Upset,
won?
the
That makes
upset.
no sense at all. I mean, and I know Tyler would usually at this point go, "Well, if you watch the stats, Todd, the multiplier was totally in Kaspar's favor." But I'm like, I don't care. It totally defies logic, especially considering who he was going up against at points, if you know what I mean. So I don't know, but it's just like that happened. And then,
Well, it pretty much was indeed the multiplayer. It was like at the last
yeah,
hour of like the Broncos side.
exactly. So, and then before the podcast last week, I had spent most of my day beating Neo The World Ends With You. And much like the previous game, there was, quote, another day. It's a small spoiler, but it doesn't really mean much. Basically, it's an alternate universe take on the game, and you get to have a little fun. The original Another Day was this really in-depth, hilarious take on the characters and the world, and they focused it on Tin Pin Slammer, which is really, really fun. And so when I saw that there was another day, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna hold off till now. I'm gonna wait till I get home, and then I'm gonna play it. So that didn't happen because I got slammed with work. But once I finally got to play it, I dove in. It
Really?
sucked. I'm sorry. Like, this was the literal lowest point of my game. I was almost rushing to get done with it because I wanted to say I could beat it, and at most multiple times I almost rage quit. I never rage quit in the original game, not once. All right? And it's just like, why? And here's why. Because the original game, as I noted, was an alternate universe take with the characters, and they focused on Tin Pin Slammer. And for this one, they basically just did like a boss rush mode. And that I know that some people will find that entertaining, but after the emotional experience that I went through beating the last, couple days of the game, I wanted something more than boss rush. I could go to something like Dark Souls and do a boss rush. I never played Dark Souls, but I'm just using it as a reference. I could do something like Dark Souls and have a brutal boss rush mode. All right? I don't need that in my World Ends With You game. And yet this is what it was, and it's like, okay. And I swear the credit sequence was so long for not a lot of content. And I'm like, why? I was expecting like almost another day two to happen, but it didn't. And so I don't understand that choice because it just felt like a lack of effort. It did. It didn't make me laugh. It didn't make me think like, oh, who's going to show up next? It barely used any of the characters outside the main core. And they even did a little bit of a fourth wall poking with a certain couple of characters by saying, "Hey, we're not getting a lot of screen time here. Eh, let the new kids have it." And it's just like, "Oh, that's funny." And that was like the funniest bit of the whole game. Like, that's it. Okay? Like, I expect more. I waited how many years for this game, and then you screw it up on another day? Like, come on, man! And all I can say is I'm glad that I did not play this before my review, because that would have soured my opinion of the game, even if just a little. But obviously, and yes, I know I can hear some of you people screaming, but Todd, that's the after stuff game. It doesn't matter. It matters to me, man!
I'm gonna say the opposite and say that that should factor into your opinion of the
Thank
game.
you.
Yeah.
Look, let me put it this way. When I beat the original World Ends With You game, now, and again, I highly recommend that to you, Tyler. When I got to Another Day, I wasn't sure what to expect, and what I got was a very fun, in-depth experience that was just totally insane and off-brand and whatever. It was just a fun way to, get away from the seriousness of the main title. And then with here, it started out that way, and then it became like, here, beat this boss, beat this boss, beat this boss, beat this boss. And the difficulty, I swear, was harder than the main game. And that might have been the point. But I had accidentally put it on easy mode, because I was trying to get through the main game before the podcast. And I had forgotten I left it on. And so I'm facing these bosses on easy, and I'm getting wiped out. And I'm no slouch. And sure, I had forgotten I had not played the game in like 3 4 days, but I wasn't forgetting my strategies that easily. And I was getting like wiped the floor with like the first boss. And so by the time I got to the last one, I'm like, I gotta survive. I've gotta survive. I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make it. It's like, that's. It wasn't fun. And I said specifically in my game review that this is like one of the most fun games I've played all year. It is my game of the year right now, and I'm going to advise people don't play Another Day. All right? No, not the, Another Day, the chapter title, not Another Day in terms of actual time context. I want you to play the game until you beat the main story. Do not go beyond the main story. It does nothing. I want more. I want it better than that. Like, come on. Like, make me wait 11 years for a sequel, and then the best you can give me an after mode is a boss rush. Like, really? That's all you got?
I don't know if they're probably taking cues from Capcom with going to the boss rush or survival mode, but yeah, it just seems kind of like, I don't know, maybe just like a hint or like even a fan service chapter or some sort is even better. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, again, they even say, like, this game takes place in an alternate world, you know, not connected to the main game. And so you can do whatever you want. That's why they focus on Tin Pin Slimer in the original Another Day. And then here, it's just like, no, we're going to throw all the bosses at you again. We're going to crank up the difficulty, and you're going to see if you can survive. I'm like, but I barely survived the main game, and I actually had a connection to that. So why do I care here? So, eh. Again, the main game is still phenomenal, still my game of the year, but Another Day is a blemish on the greatness of a title, and I hate that.
Yeah, all I'm right. surprised you're so adamantly against it, considering how much you love the main game.
I do! I love the main game! Well, think about it like this. Pokemon Sword and Shield, we all played that. So imagine, like, after Pokemon Sword and Shield, you had a good time, and then the after content wasn't the Legendary and the Dynamax stuff and blah blah blah, but, like,
this
random...
is not the first time last time Pokemon Sword and Shield will be mentioned in today's podcast.
Ooh!
Little foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
Call back to 2 weeks ago's foreshadowing of Kidicurus Uprising.
There you go. So, like, but imagine instead of, like, having an actual storyline with those, you know, descendant guys and legendary Pokemon, imagine you had to do a fetch quest. Like, go to Viridian City, get this. Go to whatever city and get this. Go to that city, go to this. Go to Stone Side and get this. And then at the end you get, like, a special Pokeball. And, like, that's the end of the content. Like, that's the feeling I had, where I just played a great game, and then I'm here for another day. I was so pumped for it, and then by the end, I'm like, yeah, glad that's over. I beat it in less than an hour. It was not... It was just... There was nothing there. Like, ugh. Ugh! The only thing that was worse is if Kamiya showed up with another outfit. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. See what I did there, Will? I fused my hate of Faye with... You know this. Never mind. So, again, play Neo, beat the main game, and stop. That is my professional, your host recommendation. So, there you go. All right, we'll take it away.
Well, for me, it has been just kind of a better week as well. Like, as usual, I've been playing Faye as well, and thankfully my RNG luck has been good. First session, actually.
Of course it has.
Not the character I wanted, but okay, I got myself a Pirate Surtur, which, okay, his abilities as a Lancer, fine, why not? So there's that, and also just recently using my, so far used up to 9 of my summon tickets, and right now I did got Henriette and another Sedge, so there's that. I'm trying to get the dude.
That's what I forgot. I did the 10 ticket thing, and I got nothing!
Ouch.
Nothing!
Ouch.
Oh, yeah.
So, but again, just as they said in the Faye channel, well, again, we'll talk about it, but later in the second half of this month, we are expected to get Choose Your Legend Spy. So, for everyone, just save your orbs for the time you read. Just save your orbs. Yeah. So, there's that. As well, for me, has been also, we'll be talking about later on, but I actually have tried the new content update for new Pokemon Snap, and just only played a little bit. Briefly, we're going to the whole shrinking of your card. That was say I forgot the name, but yeah, the shrinking mechanic and yeah, just being go shrunk and seeing all these Pokemon in giant form is like whoa, okay, and get to see Shroomish and all that is like yeah.
Isn't it called the Neo One?
Yeah, it's called the Neo One. Though.
Okay, okay, thank you.
How's that for symmetry?
I'm going to do more of a deep dive on this in my What Have You Been Playing?
Sure. So I agree, please. So that as well. Let's see, what else did I have to play? I mean, yeah, like aside from playing a little bit of Pokemon Unite, as well as continuing on with a little bit of No More Heroes, the first game. Nothing really else per se. That's not because again, right now I'm just waiting for No More Heroes 3, trying to finish up these previous two games to go and save spring save data over, so that. But overall, it has been fairly light as well. Yeah, all that, not really much to say the least. So yeah, new Pokemon Snap. So it has been kind of quiet week myself. So overall, it's not bad. It's not bad. That was my word.
All right, Tyler, take it away.
Yes, because I've been playing new Pokemon Snap also, and I have never been more aware of the fact that I am just a statistic who marketing pitches work against, as I was when I walked into GameStop to buy new Pokemon Snap, like right after seeing the Twitter video announcing the content update. It's like, I am a statistic. I am who they were targeting with this. Somebody was on the fence with this game and didn't get it, and now I'm like, okay, I've got to get it. But instead of like tackling the update's content in the news, let's just talk about it here because it's what we've been playing. There are three new courses that have been added, each to already existing continents in the base game. And that's kind of important because if you're expecting totally different locales with all new Pokemon, you'll be a little bit disappointed with what's here, even though it's free, because there are only 20 new Pokemon that have been added to the game, and they're spread thin across all three courses. But all three are great. They're really, really fun. My favorite is the Barren Badlands at night, especially in the beginning. There's a Torchic and a Tepig and a Shinx and a Rockruff that are playing around. And they like follow you throughout the level, kind of like Pikachu and Scorbunny do on the Floreo Nature Trail. And at the end, they all like appear in these tunnels on the side of the canyons. And if you take a picture of them, they'll like come to greet you at the very end of the level, and you'll get some easy diamond rank 4-star photos, which is like a fun little reward. And the other courses are the Mighty Wide River Side Path. Will, you had talked about the Secret Side Path where they shrink you down to like the size of an ant, and the change of scale is really, really cool. It lets you, I think one of the weaknesses in this game is how difficult it is to get a large photo of the tiny Pokemon, just so you can get that diamond ranking. It's really tricky to like, for like Joltik, for example, it's easy to put him right in the center of the frame, but he's so small that it's hard to get that 2000 points for size to get that highest rating. But by shrinking you down, suddenly it's really easy because you're smaller than these Pokemon and they fill the whole frame. And it's a cool idea, and it seems as though they're going to bring it to future stages. Professor Mirror says that it's a prototype and it only works on the Floreo Nature Trail, which to me sounds like they're going to update this game again and bring that feature back to different continents, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, more than likely.
The Mighty Wide River is the final one. It adds Feraligatr is probably like the highlight new Pokemon that's there, and you're pretty much going down some like white water river rapids, which is a pretty fun one also. There's some cool photos to take of Wooper and Quagsire.
Yeah, like, as like I checked, like, yeah, Tatsa is the most nostalgic. It's pretty much is, like, not a one-to-one reference to the original game, but it has, like, a lot of cues from the original game as well in that stage.
Oh, right? So I never played the original game. I wondered why he said that. But that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Because, like, if you can trigger the Gyarados, like, I've seen some videos, I kind of spoiled myself, but if you trigger like, the flags for the Magikarp, you actually do get Gyarados back. And, yeah, that Gyarados, if you manage to trigger the flags at that final scene where he comes right at you instead of the usual waterfall scene, if anybody can recall, yeah, like, that Gyarados shot is pretty, pretty nostalgic.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, please, go.
No, I was going to talk about more of the update, so.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So they've also added some new research titles, some new profile icons, photo filters, stickers, and frames. So all that little quality of life things, you can search for other players' photos easier. And there's like some other minor, their patch notes say other issues have also been addressed to improve the gameplay experience. Very vague, but there are some nice changes.
I want to know if they fix the grading scale. All right, because I'm tired of them telling me, oh, this is totally a 3-star shot, Todd, with the Pokemon all obscured by grass, but it just happens to be a specific Pokemon, so they don't care. And then I get a beautiful up-close shot, and they go 2 stars. Like, bullcrap!
Well, I now I'll get to my overall thoughts on the game, because I am new to this. I actually like the grading system a lot. It's not perfect, for sure. But it's very clear what it wants. It wants the Pokemon to fill the entire frame, and it wants it to be as close as possible. And it wants the Pokemon to be facing the camera, and it wants them doing like a weird pose. And like you pretty much know when you take the photo and you look when you're looking at them what your rating is going to be in terms of bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. Bronze is like the lower quality photos, and then platinum is the, or diamond is the top. The star system, there's like the star system is interesting because it rewards you for playing with the world more. Like the one star photos are like the straightforward, easy Pokemon's looking at the camera. Two star is like it's eating something. And then the three and fours, you have to do specific things with the world to get those. So in the Florio Nature Trail, having Heracross fight Pinsir is a four star photo because it's something you have to like trigger.
Yeah.
So it makes sense in that way. I think it's pretty understandable. It's not perfect for sure. No. There are some photos that are way cooler than others. Like in actual photography,
yes,
the rule of thirds.
Yes, right? That's Honest Trailers made a joke about that. I was like, "Hello, rule of thirds, moron."
Did they? Yeah,
they did.
That's,
swear
that drove me crazy because I haven't taken pictures in a long time. But the rule of thirds, you want your subject on like the thirds instead of in the dead center because it makes it a more engaging photo.
Yeah.
And so it's like some that look really, really cool don't quite get there because they don't do what the game wants you to do.
Yeah.
But you know what the game wants you to do. So it's not perfect, but I don't mind it at all. I think it's really fun. For example, I spent like an hour last night, and this might not sound fun, but to me it was a blast, of trying to get like there were five Pokemon on the Florio Nature Trail, Grookey and Scorbunny and Pichu among them, that I had gold ratings for, and I was trying to get diamond ratings, and going through the course multiple times and playing with different things to try to tweak what their actions were and to change my timing and what angle I was shooting the Pokemon at was really, really rewarding. Once I got that diamond four star rank for all of them, I felt quite accomplished, and the photos were really cool. So I enjoy it for that reason. Like it brings you back. I would say don't be like me and overlook this game. I was on the fence about it. I assumed it was going to be a passive experience. And in a way, it is a passive experience, but it's actually a really exciting game. Like, there's always something going on. There's always a Pokemon flying at you or something you can do to interact with the environment that creates this perfect shot. And for some of the shots, it's like it's difficult to get them. So it's exciting. There's actually a difficulty curve. Pidgeot, for example, will, like, if you hit him with an apple on the first course, he'll fly to the top of this tree. And then if you throw an apple at Magikarp, Magikarp will jump out of the water and attract Pidgeot's attention. And then Pidgeot will swoosh around and snatch Magikarp out of the water. And it is so hard to get that photo right. But when you do, it's so satisfying. And it's such a cool shot. And you get the four star and all that cool stuff.
Yeah.
And there's real tension because if you don't get it right, you got to go back and do it again. So there's definitely, it's not a game that you can just like sit back and closure. It is a game you can sit back and close your eyes and enjoy, but it's also a game that you can lean forward into the gamer pose and be like, I'm going to time this just right and catch it. It's a delightful game. Probably in my top 10 Switch games. I'd have to think about it to put a number on it, but it's right there. And it's like, it's a bulky game. Like I'm glad we're adding free content to it, but even without the free DLC update, like this isn't an incomplete game. There's like 13 paths for you to explore, each with different variations, nighttime, daytime, different research levels bring different behaviors that like it would take 40 hours, I would say, for like an average player to 100% complete without the update.
Yeah.
Right. Like also you gotta do like the whole, the missions as well. If you're trying to get that special shot that, the team asks with you, which again, I'm still kind of doing. And of course, maxing out the, as you said, research levels right now, I actually just reached the snow level right now. And I just want to just continue like maxing out those, research levels because like the special ones, like the Lumina levels, like with Milotic and as well with the deep sea one, those things, trying to get those, research levels up there. Yeah. It's kind of tough, but that's kind of what makes me just continue to go back to it. It's just, it is a game that's instantly replayable just to get that great shot, especially if you can magical break even the 5,000 mark, which some people has done.
Yeah. I just want to note two things. One, I have to disagree with Tyler on one thing. This is not a game that you can close your eyes and play, because if you close your eyes, you're not seeing the Pokemon, and that's kind of the point of the game. So, I mean, I kind of get what you're going for, but yeah, F for execution. And B, I am glad, Tyler, that you are off the fence, but, you know, you would have been off the fence sooner if you had read a certain review that gave this game a 4.5.
Or hear our praises towards the last podcast.
So, well, hold on. I gotta defend myself here, because, and you can check the tape. Go back to, I think, the first episode of June, maybe it was the last episode of May. I was torn between this and Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, and you guys said, didn't really matter that you could make a good argument for both, and that wasn't a ringing endorsement. I thought, I knew Todd liked the game, but Todd gives everything 4.5.
There it is.
Fives.
So it's a lie.
Doesn't mean anything. That doesn't.
It's a lie.
I'm busted on you.
Oh, I know.
But yeah, no, it's amazing. It's a really, really good game. There's like a couple things that I don't like. Like the concept of having to like go through the path without being able to move is frustrating, because if you miss a shot, it's irritating to have to go back and keep taking that same shot over and over and over until you get the score that you want. Like, if you could free roam, maybe it would be better, but then it's also a very different game, and only being able to get one picture graded by the professor each time for each Pokemon, like, it forces you to do the course multiple times, which is nice, but it's also padding. There's like minor things like that are, some people will find irritating, but I really don't. I think the Pokemon are animated so well and so lovingly. The courses are beautiful.
Yes.
I'm not gonna go all the way. Score Bunny, however, I will say, I've been a Grookey Gang guy, still am. Score Bunny is electric. Score Bunny is an amazing
actually, it's fire
Pokemon.
Type.
He is so charming. His animations are amazing. They knocked it out of the park, and pretty much every Pokemon. You will, like Wooper. I came away loving Wooper. I never cared about that Pokemon. Wooper is such an adorable, well animated Pokemon in this game that, like, I really have a soft spot for this random water type that I've never considered remotely interesting before. It's an awesome, awesome game, and Bandai Namco deserves tons of credit for what they've done here.
The game is something really special, and I have not been able to play the update. I was supposed to do it yesterday, and then I had like a really weird day. I didn't have access to my Switch, and then when I did, I got slammed with work. It's like, fine, I'll do that. And then today was supposed to be better, and then it wasn't. So I'll be playing it tomorrow, hopefully, and just. Seeing the trailer already got me excited for the game again, because I mean, this game is just so well done. It really is. I love it so. Go read my review where I totally give it a 4.5, and I'll let you know when I get to play it next week, or, you know, before next episode. So, with that, we are heading to the news, and thankfully there was some really interesting pieces of news throughout the week. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And first, we have the sales numbers for the first quarter of the fiscal year, which, if you recall, is April, May, and June, which was weird because it's coming out in August, but I guess I need a month to calculate all that stuff. So, first and foremost, the Switch is at 89 million units sold. Yes, most impressive. So, what this does, though, for the Switch is that it puts it at the seventh best selling console of all time. And I'm pretty sure that includes the handhelds along with it, because it's a system. But just as important, that means it's already sold more than the PS3 and the Xbox 360 over their lifetimes. The PS3 had 87 million and Xbox 360 had 85. I didn't realize the Xbox 360 had that much sales, but then again, I also thought the PS3 was in dead last in that console generation, so
me
what do
too.
I know?
I'm glad you said
See?
That. Yeah, I totally thought the X360 outsold the PS3.
Yeah, I thought I really did, because I remember it, you know, having a very slow start because of that $600 price point. And I remember it being really low, but I guess it picked up by the end of its lifespan. I don't know. So, but the Switch, now being at 89 million, puts it in number 7. And number 6 is the Nintendo Wii, which still stands at 101.6 million units sold. So it's going to take a probably another year to get there, you know, along with the Christmas season, but it'll get there, and then it'll be the PS4 and a couple of the Game Boy and then the DS, of course. So it's got a little bit to go to get to number one, and it probably won't get to number one because I think that's like 180 million units, so I don't think the Switch will do that well. But still, this is a major milestone for the Switch, and that's something we can be proud of.
Yeah, I mean, the data is complicated. We can fawn over the 89.6 million as Switch fans. You know, we're Nintendo fans. We mm-hmm. are glad that the Switch sold well. But the year over year, this is a decline. Now, that's entirely because the pandemic was great for Nintendo's
obviously
bottom line, and Animal Crossing came out last year.
Yep.
But Switch Lite in particular, its year-over-year sales were halved. Of the 4.45 million consoles sold, 1.14 of them were Switch Lite. So that's showing a little bit of slowdown there. We'll see if the Switch OLED is able to reignite the handheld market. But I was listening to I'm trying to remember the YouTuber's name. I'll look it up and get plug him later, but he made a great point talking about the fact that the Switch OLED it's another handheld upgrade. Mm-hmm, it's not really an upgrade for people who play on the home console, and its pre-orders are going great, especially because scalpers are the worst and they're all doing
right, right, right.
I'm very curious to see how that will perform and if it's just kind of basically filling the same void as Switch Lite and will not kind of inject that boost that the Switch Lite originally did when it launched, because it was very successful right out the gate. So I think there's some interesting decisions that Nintendo has to make, especially if we do have three or four more years of Switch to go. They're still selling well, but they're slowing down, and they're going to need something to propel momentum throughout the next 3 to 4 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. Like, I happen to see like some other outlets as well writing that, yeah, like Nintendo, even with this whole situation, the world situation, they did very well in 2020. Like, again, Animal Crossing clearly was a great, great factor into that year, considering all that happened. Of course, like, it was competing with Final Fantasy VII Remake, but it still managed to go do so well. And even read some things that it's people are still buying Mario Kart 8 Deluxe even till now, and I don't know, maybe it's a different perspective, but now the sales are slowing down to this year. Like, not even Animal Crossing New Horizons is helping out now. It did great well last year, but this year now things are going back, so it's definitely in the decline. As I said, it's definitely they need something else to really and get the player base back up, excited to buy Switch units again. Like, yeah, the Switch OLED is, again, it's a minor upgrade, not really mandatory to buy it for any long-time users, especially if you bought the Switch when it first released. So they definitely do need something to really, like, really help units again. Like, with, anybody can help me out with here. Like, the later coming games here come in the winter, or, like, I mean, personally, for me, I just wait for No More Heroes 3. But like, they need something like very big to help with it. Like something similar, not to the point of like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe again. I mean, heck, I'll be very happy if they announce Mario Kart 9 if they ever. But yeah, something they really need something to really continue on, because there's no way they're gonna if they can repeat the performance of 2020. If anything,
well, I don't think being honest, I don't think that's possible, because and again, this is a bad joke, but you know, the pandemic allowed Animal Crossing to boom. Like, again, it was, what, 10 million within the first week or so? That was insane. Sorry, it was 5 million. 5 million in the first week, then 10 within the first month or whatever. But, like, that was insane numbers, and that had never happened for an Animal Crossing game before. But everyone wanted to buy it because it was the perfect, I know, I need to get through this pandemic game. Whereas the games that we have gotten this year, while great, both first and third party, they're not the games that, you know, scream, I have to go and get this right now to enjoy my life. You know, things, at least for a moment, got a little bit better. And there's also the fact that eventually they're going to find people to, you know, that have already bought the dang Switch. again, they're almost at 90 million right now. And again, that was at the end of June. So we're at August right now. So I bet they're like really close to 90 million. So they're, I'm not saying they're running out of people. That's obviously not the case, but the sales are always going to be slower. The pandemic was their chance of saying, of going and getting a big boom because people wanted to have something to do while they were all stuck at home, like Tyler said. So, and then as for the big game that's going to sell titles, we all know it's going to be WarioWare, right, Tyler?
Oh, yeah, WarioWare.
Yeah.
We can talk about software sales because Miitopia sold 1.04 million copies.
Yep, yeah, I got those numbers. We have 3 new million sellers. We have Miitopia, as Tyler said, with 1.04. Mario Golf Super Rush with 1.34. And new Pokemon Snap with 2.07 million. Proving that it was a justified sequel. You made us wait for far too long, Nintendo. So, but we were there to buy it.
Am I the only one, though, who's a little disappointed in 2.07 million for new Pokemon Snap? I mean, you look at Pokemon Sword and Shield. They've sold 21.8 million copies.
Well, like, that's because it's a mainline entry.
Let's Go Eevee sold 13.5 million copies.
But that was more like Pokemon Go, which already had that huge base. And they even promoted saying, like, this is a console version of Pokemon Go. So
I completely agree with all that. I'm not saying it should outsell those games. I'm just saying those games sold a crazy amount. And I 2.07 is not bad, but the game has been out for, unlike like Mario Golf, that was 5 days of sales for 1.34 million.
Right.
That's really, really good. That's definitely going to be over 2 million.
Yeah.
But the Pokemon, its legs are maybe slowing down. Now, again, I am not in that number. Maybe this update will get other people like me off the fence and rejuvenate its sales. But I don't know. I kind of expected a little bit higher from new Pokemon sales.
If it helps, I looked up the original sales for the original Pokemon Snap.
It's on the N64.
What?
It's on the N64.
Yeah.
Right.
But still.
Yeah.
Like I know it's a different thing, but it does still help in context. The sales of that one was only 3.6 lifetime.
Oh, wow.
So that's
more than I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. So like this is, and that's actually less than I thought it was going to be, but
it was right at the beginning of Pokemon too. Like that was was that 99 that came out?
It was 96. No, I apologize. Yes, it was 99. So that was at the end of the cycle, more or less, you know, but so when there was plenty of, you know, people to get it, and you know, 3.6. It was in its own way. It was always a cult classic title, even though it, you know, sold millions. But you know, I'm looking at Pokemon Stadium sales right now. Now that's interesting. Apparently, it sold 3.97 million. Pokemon Stadium did.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. So, but either way, I mean, if it only got 1 million. I would have said that would be a disappointment because of how long people have won. Okay, here we go. Sorry. Lifetime sales of Pokemon Stadium was 5.4 million. So, you know, that's a significant bump. Tyler, you'll like this. Diddy Kong Racing had 4.8 million and was the 8th most sold N64 game.
That's really, really good. I mean, great game. I'm surprised it was that popular.
And then Pokemon Snap was actually the 11th best sold. Wow, it outsold Majora's Mask.
Oh,
yeah, I didn't see that coming. GoldenEye was number 3. I really shouldn't be surprised at that at all.
GoldenEye, of course, I love that game.
Here's the top 10. And Super Mario 64, Mario Kart 64, Tyler's favorite game, GoldenEye, Ocarina, Smash Brothers at 5, Stadium at 6, Donkey Kong 64 at 7. See, you were talking about that one last week, Tyler, because you said it was underappreciated. Apparently not. 5 million sold. Diddy Kong Racing, Star Fox 64, and then some title called Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, some random title. No, people don't like Donkey Kong 64. I'm not saying it didn't sell
I liked
well.
It.
I liked it too, but I think if you took a poll of at least talking heads in the Nintendo space, most of them would bash Donkey Kong 64. I know Andre Seegers from Game Explain hates the game.
Yeah.
And it's blasphemy. That...
Yeah. Some people are just foolish, Tyler. You should know that better than most. Moving on.
What?
All right. So this one actually, ironically, does tie into Donkey Kong, and actually asked a certain someone to write about this for the website, but he didn't. So apparently,
I'm retired.
Yeah. Nintendo Super Nintendo World over in Japan is already getting its next extension ready, and it's going to be Donkey Kong based. So there are rumors. I'm going to the thing right now. So apparently, it's already getting started. And there was a data mine about this, and apparently it's going to be a minecart ride, apparently.
Oh.
Based on what's being shown. So obviously the minecart is a reference to Donkey Kong Country, and there's a lot of ways that could go and have fun with. But this just does prove that they are going to expand Super Nintendo World beyond just Mario, which is what only it has right now in Japan. And so they'll be adding Donkey Kong. I have no doubt they'll add Legend of Zelda eventually. They definitely have Mario Kart, obviously. But I still think Pikmin would be fun. You know, they can do like pulling up the Pikmin and throwing them for a game. But I'm glad they're expanding it. And seeing them do a Donkey Kong first, that's a good choice. Right, Tyler? Mm-mm-mm.
Donkey Kong is a great choice. The minecart is awesome. I would like to see the scope of this, because I think if you don't have like a giant jungle gym, you're making a mistake. Like there should be like fake palm trees and vines and a harness that you can for safety, and you should be able to like climb around on stuff. I think that is the maximum fun you could have. The minecart is a good start.
Right. Like, if I recall correctly, seeing some of the demo videos, like, yeah, they were like teasing what's regarding to Donkey Kong attractions, and now finally being confirmed for development. Now is like, all right, we finally get the next progress. I mean, but the only thing I have is a small worry, is because right now, unfortunately, Japan is kind of having that bull infection rate over there. So that's my only worry.
Don't worry, the Olympics will cure everything. Surely nothing can go wrong there. Yeah, I know. So, but hey, at least people are winning gold medals. Yay. All right, moving on. This one's for Will. No More Heroes. Pseudo51 himself talked about the possibility of a TV or movie adaptation of the franchise. And he goes, quote, "I've actually had a lot of offers and proposals for No More Heroes movie or TV show over the years, and as of yet, not a single one has come to fruition." That's from Pseudo himself. To be exact, one of them actually came really close, but ended up not working out. We had actually gone so far as to decide on the actor to play the main character, aka Travis Touchdown, but never made it into production. But anyway, we get proposals like that all the time. So one of these days, I'm hoping that we'll be able to make that dream a reality and give everyone No More Heroes movie or TV show that they want on Amazon Prime or Netflix or something, end quote.
I mean, this is definitely the crazy idea you expect from Suit51, and to hear them, they actually got offers to do a show. I mean,
multiple offers.
So, like, wow. And considering, again, Grasshopper Studios is pretty a small company, but to get such offers, I mean, of course, naturally, the only person I couldn't imagine could play Travis Touchdown is the character who is influenced, who is who create Travis Touchdown, is Johnny Knoxville. But...
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Again, he was made for, Charles Toucher was created in his likeness of him, but I know. Actor-wise, I wonder who could be, but who knows. But it would be something that I would like to see probably down the line, if they can afford it.
Yeah. For me, and I was talking with Will about this before the podcast, I think that this could be a perfect anime. Like, they're saying, like, I'm guessing they were inferring that it was going to be like a live-action TV show or a movie. But I'm like, why ruin what makes this game so great? And yes, I know I've never played the games, but I have, like, you know, seen them in footage and everything. And even if you go back to, like, the Studio Ghibli, you know, No More Heroes 3 trailer, you know, this is a perfect anime. Because in anime, you can get away with stuff that you just can't in live action. Like, imagine, and this is actually referencing another thing we talked about before the podcast in Castlevania. Imagine, like, powerhouse animation doing a No More Heroes anime, alright? The style, the flash, the substance, the I do not give a crap what I am saying or doing. It's just going to look awesome and be done with it. You know, that's what made Castlevania so great. And then they did the He-Man Masters of the Universe. Stop it. Animation-wise, it was good. Let's just, like, well, not going to dig into this. I like this show, I'm just saying. But, like, visually, it would be stunning, and they could do things that they would not be able to do in live action without being called cheesy. And then this would actually allow them to forego having to recast Travis Touchdown, because they've already got the Travis Touchdown actor, or one of them. So, you know, and they could bring back the original one, because I know that would make Will happy. So they've got it all there. They just go from like the video game animated graphics to actual anime graphics, and you're done. It's like perfect.
it definitely has the proper framework for an anime, sure, but as you know, animation takes a lot.
It takes a lot to
make such a great show. So I think maybe because of Grasshopper, like, they aren't actually known to be as like media based as well, besides from being a game based company. So who knows, maybe Suda51 is probably still talking to another animation studios to maybe do this thing in sometime down the line, but as of right now, it's just focused on just this game, because again, Grasshopper Studios, while I love the company, it's still a fairly small company, so they can't really afford too much, sadly.
Well, they wouldn't have, but you're thinking about this the wrong way, Will. They're not gonna be the ones paying for it. It's the other companies. It's like the actual TV or animation studios or whoever, you know, hosts it. Like, they're the ones who buy it, and then it's not Grasshopper paying for it. Nintendo's not paying for the Illumination movie, or technically. So, like, that's not how it works, all right? Because there's a studio that gets the funding to make it, and then they go and buy the rights from the various
licenses. Okay, the license.
Yeah,
the license.
It's like Konami didn't pay for the Castlevania show because, well, let's be honest, Konami wouldn't pay for it. Period.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they would get paid to, you know, host the rights, because they own the rights to No More Heroes, so they get paid for that. But it's not them making it, you know.
All right. Okay.
But we'll see. I just love the fact that apparently a lot of people have asked for this, because that just shows how popular this is.
And of course, Matthew with the whole Smash Brothers bump, of course. Yep.
Of course. So maybe after 3, depending on if that's like the quote unquote ending to the franchise, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they'll get it there. It's like, hey guys, now it's done. Who wants to make the show? You know, it's like, it's Prince money. So,
we have an Uncharted movie coming out soon. So,
don't remind me. You want to groan about something? Look at that. Look at the screenshot of a young Nathan Drake, which is already an oxymoron. So, I like Tom Holland, but this is just wrong. Yeah. All right. Speaking of just wrong, Sonic the Hedgehog card game.
Right.
I mean, how can you go fast in a card game? Unless it's speed, but that's not a Sonic thing. No, anybody? Fine, be that way. That was a good joke. But yes, apparently there is a Sonic card game going to be coming out where you can play as Sonic, Shadow, Knuckles, Tails, Amy, or Blaze. Who asked for Blaze?
Blaze is great. Blaze is a great character. Love Blaze.
Where was Blaze even from?
Sonic Rush is her DS.
Game Boy Advance, I believe.
Ah, great.
It was her DS, but...
Okay.
Anyway, but yeah, you can play 2-6 players. It's 20 to 30 minute play time. Oh, and it's based on the Sonic Hedgehog video games. Well, no, duh! And you can pre-order it on Amazon for $20. And I'm sure Tyler's already pre-ordered the penultimate edition where you can get a holographic Sonic to detail how to play the game. Right, Tyler?
Yes, you already know I have not pre-ordered this. I saw Will put it in the chat, and then I was busy, and I didn't get to look into it. So, I don't know. It does look like a standard licensed card game. I'm sure it's fun.
I mean, we just got recently a Mario Life game, so...
This is true. And I raised that one, too, for those who recall, because it's just like, yeah, that's what the game of life is about, fighting Bowser at the end. Like, okay... All right, next up we have... Oh, this is something from me. Poketoon. Yes, we had another episode of Poketoon come out, and this is its third episode ever. And this time, it decided to do a little more folksy, a little more, you know, homegrown. It was an episode about the importance of Pokemon helping humans live their lives, including a Slugma that would eat that... I said eat the house. Heat the house. It could eat the house. It's made of lava. But heat... the house, and a girl befriending the Slugma as it realizes its importance in the household for her grandparents. And going back to the previous one, the Poketoons episode with the girl in the Nidoran, this is what I love about storytelling and animation, because, you know, we have gotten so wrapped up in the fact that, you know, Pokemon's about battling, it's about catching them all, and then these stories, not like Twilight Wings in certain ways, talks about how Pokemon can just be a part of your life without the need to battle them constantly or, you know, groom them for a contest. I mean, at the end of the cartoon, small spoiler, the girl leaves back with her mom, and the mom goes, did you make any friends? And she goes, yes, I did, Ma. And she turns back to the house and goes, bye, Slugma. And Slugma's in the fireplace, so it actually billows out some smoke from its heat to signal that it's waving goodbye. And I'm like, that's beautiful. That's touching. Disney could not... Okay, I'm sure Disney could have thought of something like that. But still, I love this kind of stuff because it's just that unique take on animation and storytelling in the Pokemon world. And we need more of this, so I cannot wait for the next Poketoon.
I have no thoughts.
I was going to say, and I'm the only one. I'm all alone in my love of storytelling. Why?
I probably should check it out later on that. Because as we say with like the last one with Magikarp, this thing, like it just has that heartwarming feel to it. So I got to check it out myself.
Yeah, it is on the website. And this time, unlike the last episode, this one actually has English subtitles. So you don't have to worry about, you know, trying to interpret it just through animation alone. Though I'm sure you could. If your heart burns for stories like mine does. All right, next up we have something for one of Tyler's favorite games ever, Mario Golf Super Rush. Not only is it a million seller, it has a brand new update, a content update even. And in this one, you're going to get, here, I got the article up. You're going to get a new mode in ranked match. You're going to get Toadette as a character. You're going to get New Donk City as a course and improved motion controls. So clearly the game is fixed, right, Tyler?
Yeah. All the deeply rooted issues with how it plays and the character balance and all that stuff, it's totally resolved. They brought back manual controls, so that's fixed. No, this is a minor update. It's nice. I'm going to check out the New Donk City course once we're done here. And yeah, I'm glad they're updating the game still. The ranked mode is a big addition as well. It should have been here at launch. It's weird to me that this comes out like 40 days after the actual game launched. It could not have missed the when the game went gold. It couldn't have missed that spot by much. So it does feel a little dirty in that regard. It should have been in the base game, but we'll take it. I'm glad that they're updating it, and it seems like much more is to come. If it sold this well, it behooves them to continue.
Yeah, in the official tweet, which was posted today, it said, look forward to more updates later this year. So,
I mean, like, I can imagine like other different levels, like, I don't know, like with Super Mario, continue on with the Super Mario Odyssey levels, like, yeah, just bring on more of those, that. Of course, new characters as well, so, I think hopefully this is just my suggestion, but please put in a second stage for the battle stadium. At least, like, yeah, I like the stadium and all that, but please add a variation to that, and then we'll probably have something else.
So, all right, moving on. We have, okay, this is a rumor, but I want to talk about it anyway. There's a rumor going around about the final character for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And I know I said we wouldn't talk about these, but this one actually was at least somewhat kind of credible, so I'm going to talk about it because this is from a guy who apparently predicted that Dante would be a Mii costume, that Kazuya and Sephiroth would be characters, and blah, blah, blah. They're stating not who is the character, but what brand it's going to come from. And they say that it's going to be from Capcom. So, now they did not give a hint as to who, but this person who, again, apparently has been right on the past few characters and Mii costumes, has said that the next character might come from Capcom. So, we already have Ryu and Ken, obviously. We have Mega Man. Zero is an assist trophy. So who logically, as good as possible, who from Capcom could be this last character?
I think your boy Phoenix Wright makes a lot of sense. He's in Marvel versus Capcom, so there is precedent there. As goofy as he is, they could definitely make it work. There is, those games are on Nintendo platforms, so I kind of think if it's Capcom, that's where I would lean.
Obviously the main influence I can probably think of is going to Marvel vs. Capcom, and I don't know, this is just a crazy idea of me, but I think Beautiful Joe. I have a feeling.
Now that one I would support.
Because again, they still have hold the license over for that character before Platinum Games separate from them. So I mean, either be Beautiful Joe or I don't know. I'll be very happy if they even put an Okami.
Ooh, Okami, that's another one I'd like.
Yeah, like it's hard to say. From Capcom's side.
Yeah. I'm glad that Capcom's doing something again with the Switch. But I also feel that they could I don't know. I don't like these rumors, and I almost didn't click on this, but then they go, oh, we're not telling you a character, we're telling you what brand it could be from. That at least gives us options. I think Beautiful Joe, of the ones you mentioned, Will, would be the best one because, of course, all the Beautiful Joe games were on the GameCube, and he's got a very big backing. His time slowing and speeding up, that could be a little tricky to work out because obviously you can't just screw with all the players by doing that. But if you play it right, it could be a very fun character to have. Let's see, the other one, Morgan from Darkstalkers.
I was thinking about that one.
Yeah. I have no idea who that is.
That's dark. You don't. Oh, trust me, if you saw her picture, you know who she is.
It's a very me character, Tyler.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's a succubus.
Oh yeah.
Morgan Island.
She's like one of the main Capcom characters in Marvel vs. Capcom every single time because of how she looks. So also, and I know this one might be a little more of a deep cut, but a Strider Hero.
Maximilian will go crazy with Strider Hero.
I would love Strider Hero. Of course, was on the multiple Nintendo systems. Ninja, so easily something you can do. And again, Marvel versus Capcom right there. Chris Redfield? Nah. Leon, though.
Leon S. Kennedy. That makes some sense. Actually, that's a great pick. I think it's the final character.
Yeah.
So it's not... Beautiful Joe would be cool and fun, but I don't think that that's the final character for... After all of the cool stuff that they've done before that, that would be...
I agree.
A bit of a dud, as would a lot of the other characters we've mentioned.
Yeah.
I should also add, and this kind of discredits the leak a little bit, although please. Sakurai cannot be trusted.
Please, go ahead.
He has said repeatedly that there will not be any other characters. This leaker has also said
there's
going to be a new Zelda character, and Waluigi also will be.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that leak too, and just like, stop it. Get some help.
I wouldn't be shocked. It's a Sakurai move for sure, and he said we're going to wait a long time for revealing this final character, so maybe they are working on multiples. And that would make a weirder Capcom character like Beautiful Joe more likely, because people would be like, oh, we got Beautiful Joe, but we also got Waluigi, oh my gosh! So that there's some potential for a Sakurai deception here.
So I found a character that is totally Capcom and absolutely should be the last character. You ready for this? E. Honda. Yes. Sumo, we need a sumo. Okay, think about it. Okay, with the arm thrusts and everything, we could have the sumo steam room as a stage. Boom! Lock it in.
I just don't want another fighting game character.
Neither
do I.
I'm
so tired of... It's like the characters. Everybody complains when they add Fire Emblem characters. I am like now complaining when they add fighting game characters. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, actually, funnily enough, when I was at the con last week, I was talking with a guy about who should be the last character. And we were getting into a heavy debate about who it should be, and there are a lot of characters that it could be, but like you said, Tyler, this is the last character. I have to believe they're going big, like in a big way. And as much as Okami or Phoenix or Strider or even Morgan and Leon, they're cool. I don't know if I believe they're final. I still think Sephiroth should have been the final one. Based on what we know, and obviously the sixth character could blow him away, but based on what we have right now, Sephiroth is the biggest one.
Yep, by far.
And I liked having, Min Min. I loved having Pyra and Mithra as a tag team combo. Minecraft Steve can burn. And of course, Kazuya. But, Sephiroth. Even the trailer was the biggest boss of all. Chamberlain was amazing, so he has to have something up his sleeve. Otherwise, why didn't Sephiroth go last? Because he even did the whole boss mode thing. He's done that. He's never done that with any other character. That would have been a perfect ending thing to do. So I don't know, but Yeah.
All right. It's definitely just so much we can wonder. But again, as you said many times over, let's just wait and we'll hopefully see something, hopefully at the VGAs or sometime down the line.
Yeah, one can pray. All right, and finally, a story for Tyler. WarioWare, what's the next one?
I can't think of it off the top of my head. It's like Get to It or I'm looking it up.
Go ahead. I'll wait.
Get It Together.
Yeah, there you go. WarioWare Get It Together has officially gone gold. So, and that's rare, because actually you don't really hear Nintendo games going gold. They just don't. But Nintendo today said WarioWare Inc.'s latest game is complete. Tag a friend you're excited to play WarioWare Get It Together when the game comes to Switch on September 10th.
Yosh. I am going to be in Europe when it comes out. I'm bummed about that.
Wait, really?
Yes, my brother's wedding is September 4th over in Italy, so I will not be here for a little while. But more pressingly, I'm going to have to wait like 4 extra days to buy WarioWare, which stinks. Although the Switch isn't region locked, so maybe this I can true. Just find a local GameStop.
Right.
All I need is Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I certainly will have that.
There you go. And think about it. You'll be getting a game about a person related to an Italian plumber while in Italy.
Honestly, I'm all in on this.
There you go.
I'm going to find whatever game stores there are over there and get WarioWare immediately.
Yeah, man. And do you know why? Because when you're over there, you need to get it together.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. This game looks really, really fun, and I love that tweet because it just it almost feels like a meta sort of thing where like you see the picture of Wario and his friends like making the game, and
well,
it feels like
friends,
Wario has just
but...
submitted it into the ESRB for rating and approval.
There you go. All right, and now we head to our main event, because once again, ladies and gentlemen, we are continuing on with the game meme that we've been doing the last 2 weeks. We have a third row for today, and it's going to be very interesting as we begin yet again the NEP Secret Society. All right, I am calling this meeting to order, and we have some very interesting ones to do today. And we're going to get all started off with Back in the Day game. And I'm going to start this one off because this one was honestly the easiest one for me to pick above all. And this is, for me, Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. Because back in the day... I feel so old. Back in the day, this game was the thing. This was my jam, my love, my everything. Like, I played this game when it was on my babysitter Mona's kids' SNES, because my family was too poor to get a console back then. My N64 was the first one I ever had. It was bought for me. We got Mona's SNES later on when her kids were done playing it. But we would play this game, like, all the time. You know, this and Aladdin, you know, back when video games were good. And funnily enough, they had Link to the Past. I barely touched it. I don't know why, but I never did. And not Link to the Past. Yeah, Link to the Past. So, but Super Mario World was my jam. I loved this game. I loved the levels. I loved being riding Yoshi back in his debut, going to all the secret levels. I loved using the cape to fly to this cloud levels. I loved the star map with all the epic names, Tubular and Bossa Nova and Radical. Like, I would say those words in conversation just because I saw them in a Mario game. Like, hey, that's Tubular, bro. And like, do you even know what that means? Like, yeah, it's a good thing. And they go, oh, yeah, okay, sure, son. So, hey, whatever, it's a Mario thing. But, like, for me, I remember playing that game so much. If you were to ask me to list my favorite Mario games of all time, and I think we've done that before, but Super Mario World is my number one, bar none, outside of maybe Thousand Year Door. But like pure Mario, this was it. And back in the day, I would play this all the time.
This is not the last time that Super Mario World will be mentioned on today's podcast.
Foreshadowing!
Not my pick for back in the day game. For me, I'm going with Mario Party 2. That was an after school. My friends would ride the bus home, would ride my bus instead of theirs. come home, we'd play Pirate Land or Western Land or Space Land, any of those courses. They're among the best in the series. The mini games are delightful. While Mario Party made some good quality of life improvements down the line, like adding additional item slots, I don't think you can beat the combination of boards and mini games that are in Mario Party 2. There's pretty much no clunkers in the mini games, and there are no clunkers in the boards. I hope that when Mario Party Superstars comes we get at least one more board from Mario Party 2 to join Spaceland, because that was my favorite. And back in the day for that would really be like from the time it came out when I was like 6 all the way through 2012, where I would play it senior year of high school. Before I went away to school, we had everybody come over, like all of our neighborhood friends, and we just played every one of those boards as like a send-off thing. So Mario Party 2, back in the day, classic.
Yeah, mine was actually more Mario Party 3, but I understand. I remember playing 2 with my friends as well, but 3 was my jam with my friends. But yeah, I get it.
I mean, if it would go Mario Party, like I gotta give props to the OG one, the Mario Party 1, because that thing we had so much. Like I remember my friends and my brother's friends just can't get enough of the first game. It's just that crazy, right? Well, for me, like, we're going to the game back in my day. Man, like, just a lot of things. There's a lot of categories. I would say that the Asumar RPG Legend of the Seven Stars for the SNES, that thing would have been one. And who would have think that it's already been 20 years since Final Fantasy X came out back on the PS2, which, again, 20 years, holy crow, Marty. But just one game that I say, like, this is, like, back in the day, like, no one's gonna play it. You know it. It's Skies of Arcadia. It's Skies of Arcadia.
Boo.
Yeah. Yes, I know it's not Nintendo, but bear with me. But Skies of Arcadia, I mean, first came out Dreamcast. I don't have a Dreamcast, but then again, brought it over to the GameCube, and it's like, yeah, this game just hooked me lying there. I mean, sure, the GameCube's not as like older like with the SNES or that time, or it's right after N64, but this game is just, it's just, again, the age of piracy in a different way. Sky Pirates, all that, and just, of course, you having your own ship, all that, like, very reminiscent of, like, the Sudoku days or whatsoever, like, commanding your own crew, pirate crew and all that. It's just, yeah, just that age of exploration, like, it's just that nothing can make it like what Sega and Overworks did back in the day. It's like, RPG, Space, Sky Pirates, a whole world, empires, different nations to explore. It's just like, yeah, just that sense of wonder. And I know it's not as old as like Bar Party or as a Super Mario World, but is old enough to say the least. If you ever get a chance to, if you can find out like an old OG copy on GameCube, which you don't have to pay scupper prices, then yeah, definitely high to just get the Skies of Arcadia. And yeah, that's my back in my day kind of game.
All right. Next up, we have this is gonna be a. This is going to be interesting. Biggest letdown. And I kid you not, I did not have mine until like 10 seconds ago when the game like flashed in my brain. So I'm definitely going to enjoy going last this time. So Will, go ahead.
This one's a much more fairly a recent entry, for to say the least, but kind of a cop-out. But for me, I got to go with Mario Tennis Aces for that one. Yeah, it's fairly recent, but I can't really remember any other game that actually maybe felt as disappointed as Mario Tennis Aces. It's just like, again, it had so much promise. I mean, I love, like, again, I remember still battling Tyler on that one online match, and we were battling it so hard. So, like, that was the only moments. But the story mode, that thing is just, like, it's so disappointing. Like, they could have done something, and I love the pre-state CG trailer at the beginning. Like, I was hoping for, like, back with Mario Aces, like back on GameCube, like something similar to that with the whole CG trailer and like that whole comedy skit and all that. But no, they had nothing there. It's not no story, no nothing, no substance, no spirit, all glitter but no soul. It's just like, yeah, I can't help but feel a little bit crestfallen when I like that. The story was just like, nothing. There was just nothing. So yeah, first thing for me, Mario Tennis Aces count was the biggest disappointment for me so far.
Mario Tennis Aces was a disappointment for me too. I think Super Rush is more disappointing. The story mode I never had super high expectations for, and I think that was like the difference there. Whereas like the anime, like the actual gameplay itself was actually really, really fun, despite the atrocious character balance and some flaws with the actual systems. I think for me, Super Rush is a slight notch higher, but I agree. I was disappointed by Aces also, even though I was looking at my total played, like my most played Switch games, and Tennis Aces is like at the, it's like it, like sixth most played Switch game. So I clearly enjoyed it enough.
All right. I didn't play Tennis Aces, so I have no comment. But Tyler, how about you? Biggest letdown.
My biggest letdown is Pokemon Sword and Shield. I didn't hate this game. It was fine. I believe I reviewed it and gave it a 3. I've become a bit harsher these days. I would probably drop that down to a 2.5. It's just an average game. But that's the problem with it. It's an average game. When Pokemon was jumping to home consoles for the first time, and I know that the Switch is a hybrid system, I had expected a bigger leap in terms of both graphics and gameplay and animation. And what we really got was just an up-resed Sun and Moon. Like the wild area was fine. It wasn't that big and it wasn't that interesting.
But was it wild?
It was slightly wild, a little wild, but I found myself, for the first 5 hours, I was like, oh, people were wrong. This game is really fun. Pokemon is really fun. And that is true. Pokemon is just fun. But when you look at what they could have done, when you look at the animations, and I know Snap is a different game that's based entirely around making the world charming and fun to look at. But when you look at those animations compared to what was done in Sword and Shield, I just think it's hard not to look at that game and think, wow, this was rushed. They pushed this out because they wanted to hit this holiday deadline, and they sacrificed making the game as great as it could be. And that to me is a disappointment. I would have much rather them broken their release cycle and taken the time to make this the special home console experience than it could have been.
All right. So mine is one that we've talked about in certain ways, but I've never really talked about it in being a letdown. It's Paper Mario Sticker Star.
Okay.
Because here's why. I loved the original Paper Mario. Loved it. And I know it's Tyler's favorite of the franchise. I adore Thousand Year Door. I think I talked about that last week or the week before. I liked Super Paper Mario. Yes, it was a departure, but I didn't mind it because the game was good and the story was deep. Like, that really helped make it for me, was the story was deep. And so when they said, hey, we're bringing Paper Mario to 3DS, I was all for it. I was like, let's do this thing, put it in handheld, it's going to be awesome. It was not awesome. It was horrible. And you look at the sales and you go, but people clearly liked it. No, they thought it would be an actual Paper Mario game. And instead, we got a game where you had to look for stickers everywhere. And then you had to keep using the same ones in battle. The flow wasn't the same. There was no partner characters at all. Even if Super Paper Mario had partner characters, technically. It didn't feel like a Paper Mario game. And that like immediately turned me off. And I tried. I gave it, you know, Puncher's Chance and all that. I didn't even make it past level 2. I literally got to the point where I was tired of the combat. I was tired of the story. I really didn't care about it. And I just stopped playing. I have never beaten that game, and I am never going to. And then like Paper Jam came out, which is the Mario and Luigi Paper Mario Fusion. I didn't play that one. I heard it was bad. Color Splash was bad. And then there was, of course, Origami King, which you liked or you didn't like. I know Tyler liked it. That's fine. But I loved the Paper Mario franchise with all I had. And then Sticker Star came out, and it was just so bad that I was almost turned off to the franchise entirely. I went back and played Thousand Year Door just so I could remember what a good Paper Mario experience was. And I go back to that game a lot. I will never touch Sticker Star again because it was just that bad. And then I found out that it was because of Miyamoto that this happened. He said, you can't keep doing the same game over and over again. And he came up with the idea of the stickers. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Miyamoto, you're a legend, but that's a bad idea. So
yeah, this is a great one because the game was very, just wasn't that good of a game. But also the pre-release marketing the stuff that was shown before Miyamoto got his fingers on the game looked like a traditional Paper Mario game on the 3DS, which is what everybody would have wanted. It would have been an amazing game. So there was a lot of hype and expectation that this was going to be an awesome Paper Mario game on a handheld. And then we got that monstrosity of a game that just fatally flawed in pretty much every way.
Yeah. Such is life. All right, next topic. After work relaxation. Now, for this one and for a certain other one, I will break the Nintendo barrier. You can go any game here. Any game on any platform at any time. If it is the game that you go to relax after a time, go for it. So, Tyler, it is your start.
Yes, so as we've done the past several weeks, I'm trying to go with a different game for each one of these picks, and I'm trying to keep it as Nintendo as possible. So I'm going to keep it Nintendo and go Super Mario World here.
Okay.
It's not necessarily the most relaxing game because it's pretty fast paced and there's platforming going on. There's stuff flying at you all on screen. But for me, this is a game that I've beaten so many times that I can totally turn my brain off and cruise through, loving the soundtrack, loving the level design. The animations are awesome. I love the way Mario looks in this game. That 16-bit sprite is just A+. And you can when you've mastered a game to such a, when you've played a game so many times that it's just, you know it as well as you know your own face, it becomes relaxing to revisit. And I've definitely 100% completed New Super Mario World 20 times, so that this would be a post-work relaxer for me.
All right, for me, I'm actually going to go to a recent game because I could just feel the relaxation as I played this title. New Pokemon Snap!
I was kind of considering that between the Bad Day Cure as well. Yeah.
So, I knew going into this game that this was going to be a title where I could just relax and enjoy taking pictures of Pokemon, but I didn't realize just how relaxing it would be. This is a game where there was the forest level, the mist, the foggy, marsh area or whatever, the volcano, the Badlands, even the gigantic Lumina Pokemon. There was just such beauty in this realm. Even the stuff that's supposed to be scary, like a Mightyena going after a Snorunt. Or an Ariados having a bunch of Bond Suites in its web, and you know exactly what that Ariados is going to do to those Bond Suites. I just found myself in awe, turning, and Tyler talked about this earlier, but there's a new Pokemon everywhere, and you're always looking for that next experience, and I enjoyed the heck out of just lying on my bed, playing this for an hour or two, and just taking pictures of Pokemon after Pokemon after Pokemon. And just feeling the tension go with. The only tension I would have is if I almost missed a Pokemon and I didn't get the shot. And they'd be like, darn it! But then I see another Pokemon, I go, oh, look at that Pokemon. So, that's relaxing right there. When you have a mission, but you're like, it's secondary to just observing the Pokemon. All we needed was David Edinburgh going, we now observe the majestic Heracross. Oh, it's going after Pinsir. Oh, this is wonderful. They're clearly fighting over territory. Masterful. Oh, he's going for the Mega Horn attack. Oh, the Pinsir is knocked down. Curse him! Oh, wait. Edinburgh wouldn't do that. But still, I was watching a nature documentary, in a video game, and it was awesome. And it was so relaxing.
Yep.
All right, so let's see. Will's is either going to be Skies of Arcadia or Second Kagura.
You wish.
No, I don't wish, but I know you.
After work relaxation, sure, Second Kagura is definitely that game that would be good for me, if anything else.
Yeah.
But for me, just to keep it just generally PG, for me, recently, I'm just going to go with a simple case. I'm going to go with Fall Guys Total Ultimate Knockout. I reviewed the game, and Granted, it's not actually a good relaxation given to how competitive it is. But again, if you know MXC, Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, that show, and any other like TV afternoon shows, you come after back at work and you see these like people getting knocked off their butts just for the sake of your own enjoyment. But the fact that Fall Guys is just like that same concept, but you are playing with it, and of course the whole battle royale, getting the crown for yourself, is just like, yeah, I always seem to come back to every season with like the new mini games, new ways of how they want to torture you. Like, why are you so cruel, Mediatonic? Like, but again, you jump through the hoops, you jump through the fans, and of course all these different collaborations from 2B, from Nier Automata, to Godzilla, to Sonic, to Shovel Knight, all these different costumes for the sake of like dressing up is, I don't know. For me, it's always just that enjoyable game after work. Like, okay, time to go jump through the hoops and get my jumping bean beat again. But yeah, for me, it's Fall Guys. It's just that kind of game for me after work. So yeah, that's my after game work relaxation.
All right. So next up, we have favorite protagonist. And for me, I was going for a character that was deep. It's Ike. You know it's Ike. I've said it like how many times on this podcast? All right.
Oh, yeah. I wonder how many times.
Let's go to the counter. No, it's Ike. It's not even close. Like Link would be like top five for me, but no, Ike. From like the moment I played his game and I saw this character, he is the end all be all of protagonists for me. Because he is a relatable guy. And you're like, wait a minute, isn't he the son of a mercenary and, you know, like the hero of the land and killed a goddess and whatever? And it's true. I haven't killed a goddess yet. But when you talk about his personality, he is the guy that you want to be your bro. He is the guy that you want as your second, your best friend, your best man, whatever. He is that guy because he is the son of a mercenary, which in this world of Tellius is basically a commoner just who can use his sword to get stuff done. You know, he's low class, and yet he will protect Princess Alencia with all he has because he believes in her. He's not just, you know, a person who's paying him to get her to beg Neon. He treats her as a regular person, you know, not as higher class, not as nobility. He sees her as a human. He treats her as a human. When Tsunaki, the dang brat, tries to play games to have fun, in her own words, Ike loses it because he's like, how can you treat my friend that way after all we've been through? He hates the idea of nobility because most of the time they're downright snobs. And, you know, they think very little of the common people, even though it's them who are suffering. He is a guy who was granted the title of Lord, and he did it only because he had to, and then cast it away the moment he could, because he knew it was only causing problems. And then when he got it again, his exact words after it was done was, "Not again." He hated it. He didn't want to be that guy. He just wanted to be a guy who you could count on to get a job done and to help you out. He helped the people at a low cost because he wanted to save them and help make their lives better. He is the most selfless, pure guy ever. I mean, is he a bit naive at times? Sure. Should he be a little more world wise? Maybe. But you love him because he's not, because you want to talk like Ike at times. And that's the reason he's totally in Smash Bros. It's not just like, oh, he's the other Fire Emblem Lord. No, he is the Fire Emblem Lord. Sorry, Tyler, I know you like Marth and Krom, but Ike totally kicks their butts. All right? He is the one of the few non-nobles in Fire Emblem, and he's totally awesome. Point blank, end of story, he's the best.
How quickly we forget the true best Fire Emblem protagonist.
Don't you dare say Micaiah. Don't you dare say Micaiah. No, I will hurt you.
No, my favorite protagonist, Dimitri Alessandra Blathen.
Dimitri is great. Dimitri is great.
Dimitri is the best protagonist in video game history. I could write a dissertation about Dimitri.
Write a dissertation about Ike.
No competition between who loves who more. I would say we both have ridiculous love for both of these characters. Dimitri, the story that he goes through in every single path reveals a new reality of our world. I love the fact that in Golden Deer, he dies off screen and it feels strange Spoiler alert, by the way.
It's been out for 2 years. That's their fault.
About it. Especially if you're listening to this podcast, you know everything about Fire Emblem Three Houses. I love the fact that when he dies in that path, it feels odd that it's just like Dimitri died. And then in his path, he tells you if you weren't in his life, he would die a meaningless death. It's a powerful moment that makes you recognize the impact one person can have on your life. His mental struggles and then his eventual redemption is a powerful statement on your the ability for somebody to become a better person and become a worse person, honestly. It also tells you that you should never assume that you know what somebody is going through, because in the beginning you meet Dimitri and he seems like this really happy, well-adjusted, noble king, and behind it all he's dealing with severe mental problems. And his ability to fight through that is quite inspiring. So he's my number one protagonist and the greatest Fire Emblem Lord in history.
If it helps, Tyler, if we were to redo our Fire Emblem Lords list from, you know, so long ago.
Yes, by the way, I put Ike number one on that also, above Marth.
So. Yeah, Dimitri would easily be my number two.
Easily. Ike would be my number two.
There you go. So I just want to say that so we can end this Lord measuring contest. So, and Will, why don't you wrap this up and pick Edelgard? So I'm joking.
I mean, if we're gonna go with Fire Emblem Lords, and like, I probably will go with Edelgard or with Krom if anything else.
You do not have to pick Fire Emblem; just pick whoever is your favorite protagonist.
I mean, who else is beside the B? It's Mario. Come on! I mean, the guy has been through.
Cop out.
Yes. But again, Mario is the quote unquote protagonist of, again, he's the protagonist. Like, Mario, just a guy, a plumber from Brooklyn, trying to go, like, been thrown into many crazy situations from space to the world, to everything else, to playing sports games. And, like, no matter what he does, it's just like he is just bundle of sunshine. I mean, yeah, aside from like Kirby, who is just pure sugar, Mario is just a guy who's, again, he's a typical plumber who's just been thrown into crazy situations but managed to go and overcome the odds. I mean, again, try to go and face up a very spiky turtle, spiky flaming breathing turtle, but regardless, he just does it and does it well. I mean, again, from his power-ups to Yoshi to his brother to Wario and everything, just the cast of it all. Like, Mario is just, he's just bundle. He's just like, I mean, of course, he's not really the quote-unquote, like, the best image of a hero incarnate, like Link or some sort, or your Fire Emblem Lords.
Yeah, that's the problem with picking Mario for this, in my opinion, is he's not Link, and Sonic exists.
Yeah, I was just about to say, isn't it weird that, you know, that Tyler picked someone who was blue, and yet it wasn't Sonic?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
But again, like, it's Mario. I mean, you just can't help but not like him. Like, sure, you can say, oh, he's overdone, he's overrated, yada, 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 but you know why he has absurd time for so long. But, yeah, again, Mario is just my favorite protagonist. He's down to earth, all that. He's the all-around, well-balanced kind of guy. But you just can't hate. You just can't hate him. You can't hate him.
Well, I think Bowser finds a way. But whatever. All right, next up we have Bad Daycare. And Tyler went out of order, so Will, it's actually your turn to start.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going to adapt your choice, Todd. Yeah, new Pokemon Snap is definitely the game for the best daycare, because as you pretty much nailed it right on the head. It's just such a relaxing game. It's like unbelievable. Like, heck, just seeing Pikachu, seeing all the different Pokemon just being so cute and adorable. I mean, heck, seeing Squirtle Bunny, seeing, Torchic and all that. All these different Pokemon, like, it's so adorable. I might die from sugar diabetes. And like,
don't joke about that. Come on, have some class.
Hey, but again, it's Pokemon. It's cute. And sure, there's definitely those scary ones out there, but there was all just be points like, heck, that I have replayed that Milotic level so many times just to get that research ranking. It's just like, yeah, that music, and especially they used in the update trailer. So like, yeah, that's kind of like what really is like new Pokemon Snap is, just that relaxing and just taking pictures everywhere. It's like, yeah, the mood from beaches to the volcano to everywhere else in between is just like, just breathe it in. Exactly that. So yeah, new Pokemon Snap definitely is the bad care day for me.
All right. Okay, my next one is going to be a little bit ironic because of what happened last week. If I have a bad day and I just need a game to take it away, what I'll do is I'll turn on my television, I will put on an episode of Mythbusters, and I'll play Fire Emblem Heroes for the next 45 minutes. I know. I was like, but Todd, you wonder why you like it. Yes, I do wonder why I like it. It's become a waifu simulator. It really has. But it does have enough content to get me through a period if I need it between, you know, Arena, between Tempest Trials, Pawns of Loki. I actually really like the Pawns of Loki.
Yes, I really do.
Forging Bonds. I usually love the stories that are there. Hall of Forms. I actually got a character I had never gotten before because of Hall of Forms, so that was nice. You know, there's enough content there. And especially with the new stories and chapters and everything, I can always find something to do in that game. And it's one that I can just pick up and put down. Hey, I have 20 minutes to burn. Let's just pick up Fire Emblem Heroes. It's actually what I did at the con last weekend. I would get there early and I would make sure I was all set up. And then I'd just sit down and play Fire Emblem until I knew it was time to, you know, get serious. And I'm okay with it. Is it my favorite game ever? No. But if I need to just get away from it all, again, I'll put on Mythbusters and I'll pull up my phone and I'll play Fire Emblem for 45 minutes. And then I'll be done and I'll move on with my life. So I know it's a bit of an oxymoron because I wonder why I like the game at times, but it does have the content to keep me entertained for at least a little while, so I can appreciate that.
Just don't go to the summoning ring, because nothing is worse than having a bad day and thinking, oh, I'll just go and, yeah, you know, try my luck on the RNG gods.
I did that this morning. I'm like, you know, let's just do it. What's the worst that could happen? 20 orbs later, 40 orbs later, 50 orbs later, 60 orbs later. Yeah. I know, trust me.
Why have you abandoned me?
Exactly.
The Bible says.
Something like that. The Lord didn't get a 5-star and Jesus wept. All right. Tyler, what's your bad day cure?
The bad day cure is, it's got to be something that's bite-sized, something that you can complete in a few seconds. So that's why I really like your guys' picks. It's also going to be something that just makes you happy no matter what. And fair. Sonic the Hedgehog makes me happy no matter what.
Which Sonic the Hedgehog game?
Sonic game is Sonic Mania. And that would be my bad day cure. Revisiting all of those worlds, what's even better about this being a bad day cure is it's also a trip down memory lane, right? Like, so many of the worlds, the zones in that game are retro zones or throwbacks to Sonic 1, 2, and 3. So you're revisiting some memories with some nice variations. You're also experiencing the best 2D Sonic game of all time. Sonic Mania is pretty much a perfect game. I would say it's a 5 out of 5 for me. And it can certainly cure any bad day.
I personally would have rated it a 4.5, but that's another story entirely. So, but yeah, I was waiting for a Sonic game to show up. I really was. So I could see, though, why you said that. All right, and finally, we have a game that has, quote, that atmosphere. Now, you can read this any way you want. So pick a game that you feel has, quote, that atmosphere. So go for it. Tyler?
The answer is Xenoblade Chronicles.
Okay.
And I'm going to say Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition because having it on Switch in the HD is a big plus. It makes the world look that much more beautiful. And I can't wait for 20 years from now when the game gets remade again on even stronger hardware, because some of the set pieces as you explore the Bionis are absolutely gorgeous. You have I can't remember the names of all these places. Oh, the Sartorial Marsh, for example. It's this in the day, it's just like a foggy marsh, but at night it lights up with these just super vivid blues and purples, and the trees are glowing, the wildlife is shining and sparkling, the water is gorgeous. It concludes with a huge waterfall that you have to climb up. After you do climb up the huge waterfall, you reach this, you're in a jungle-like area with giant rickety bridges that just stretch beyond these massive canyons with enemies down below. The sun sets over this waterfall behind you. It's just an absolutely gorgeous game. Every new spot you get to is beautiful in some way. And I think that if I could live on one place, it would be the Bionis, just not at the moment of Xenoblade because things get pretty bad. But it's gorgeous. Love the diversity there as well.
All right. Good pick.
All right, Will?
For me, I'm going to go for an indie game this time around. And for me, like, this game just, it kind of really puts you in that zen mood in a very sense to similar to like the Bad Cure kind of game. For me, I'm going to go and pick that game company's Journey. Like, if you probably heard the previous title, Flower, it's very similar to that. But Journey, I highly recommend going to check out Toonami's review of Journey. It's basically, again, the traveler, you're in the desert trying to reach to that top pinnacle point of that mountain. Whether it be, if you want to be alone or you find someone else to walk alongside you on the journey. I know, it's a chiller. But yeah, just the sands, just being that solitude of your own, just making your way up to the to that summit of that mountain is just like, it's a very kind of zen kind of game. That's like, you're just walking, nothing but your thoughts, nothing but your beeps, and just like seeing what else like this of your like past civilization has, like, what is the history of your people, what are you, and do you see like another player out there helping you out, or just literally just leave away and turning into dust. Like, if anyone has played Journey, you know what I'm talking about. Just like the sand skiing, the music from Austin Wintory, just like, it just sets the mood. It's just, of course, and once you reach that pinnacle, it's just like, yeah, that kind of makes that journey so well worth it. It like very could be a metaphor of life in general or what else it may be, but Journey is just has that atmosphere that's like, yeah, it's a journey. I know it's very titular. I apologize, but that is exactly what it means. It's just like a journey. Just it's very zen. It's very somber, but it has something that's very fulfilling with it. So yeah. Has that atmosphere to boot. So yeah, for me, that game company's Journey is just that kind of game that has that atmosphere.
All right, for me, it's gonna be a little bit of an oddball pick. All right, it's Tetris 99. No, I kid. yes, the atmosphere being crushed by 98 other people. No,
the way they changed the background theme depending yeah. on which new Switch game.
Yes.
Right, and I know no, I believe Skyward Sword's coming. Yeah,
stop. Sword's I'm joking. Coming. Stop it. All right, for real though. My pick is actually Fire Emblem Radiant Dawn.
Okay,
and here's why. While Path of Radiance is my favorite Fire Emblem game, Radiant Dawn absolutely amped up what a lot of the themes were of the original game of Path of Radiance, and because of that, we get some of the most epic cutscenes and levels, in my opinion, in any Fire Emblem game. And it really sets the atmosphere when you're trapped in these scenarios. Like, for example, in the first part with my least favorite protagonist in Micaiah, you get the atmosphere of you are a literal rebel band trying to take out an empire with all their forces against you. And you feel that, you know, 1 versus 100 mentality. Then when you get to Alencia as part of the storyline, you feel the atmosphere of civil war going on, which leads to one of my favorite levels ever in Alencia's Gambit, where you're trying to survive a siege and it just really doesn't look like you're going to survive. Like, every turn I was saving, because I was like the one of the few games that had the quick save, and so I was saving like every turn, because if one thing went wrong, I had to go back and figure out a way to change the odds just enough to survive. And then Joffrey shows up, and then we have the Ike returns cutscene, which is easily one of the most boss cutscenes in all video game history. Fight me, bro, I don't care. And then you keep going. Then you have the Lagus War with Lagus versus the Lagus Alliance versus Ben Neon, and you see like the cutscene of Tibarn versus Zelgius, which is awesome, and the various twists and turns in that storyline. And then Ashera comes around, and there's a scene where all the Lagus realize that it's really quiet outside, and they're like, what's going on? And then Ike rushes out and everybody's turned to stone, and he's like asking, is anybody there? Can anybody hear me? Or is anybody out there? And it just sets the tone and sets the atmosphere. And then when you're going up the Goddess Tower and you're fighting like bad guys after bad guys after bad guys, and you know, you're hearing all these stories and how it all connects together from the first game to now, it just really sets that atmosphere and tones that this is the end. And by the time you get to that final boss with Ashera, like, you're ready. Like, you're at your peak hype level because I'm like, I'm going to kill this goddess because I need to free this land. And it's just, Radiant Dawn doesn't get the respect it deserves for certain reasons. And I do feel that Path of Radiance had better gameplay mechanics overall, but that game absolutely knew how to set a tone and show you that this world was very, very deep in what it was trying to convey. So, yeah. I think I picked Fire Emblem 3 times in this list, or in this row. So,
yeah, I wonder why.
if the shoe fits, all right? If the shoe fits. So
I'm already looking ahead to the next row, and there are some tough ones here. Depressing Game.
Oh,
that was easy for me. That was
that's
easy
you.
For me.
That's Celeste. Easy.
Well, Celeste is not. It's the opposite of depressing.
Eh.
It's uplifting. But
anyway, but yeah, we will, barring a major news update or whatever, we will be finishing this list tomorrow or next week. So definitely stay tuned for that. And with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Dialer!
Yes, last week we made a poll question, and I did.
There we go.
You'll be happy to know.
Wait.
You will be to know.
Uh-huh.
Do you think Netflix can make a good Pokemon live-action show? 44% of you said yes. 56% said no.
Close. Okay, just break the fourth wall. How many votes were there?
Number nine.
That's not bad. All right, but yeah. For the record, I was one of the yeses. I have to have faith, Alfred. Faith. So no poll question this week. I don't think there's one that's needed. So let us know what you thought of everything we talked about tonight, from the sales numbers of the Switch and its games. Do you think the Donkey Kong theme park extension will be the minecart level or something else? Have you seen the new Poketoon? Are you excited for it? Have you played the new Pokemon Snap update? Let us know what you thought about that. And are you excited that WarioWare Get It Together has gone gold? Let us know in the comments below. So, for Tellius Tyler and Wario Will, I am Triforce Todd. And ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level. So, raise the flag!